Well, hello there, Rick.
Hi, Mike, and welcome to 1859, the podcast that's named for a year right before the Civil War.
1859. Well, yes, here we are, episode 11.
It's taken us how many years to get to 11? Four years?
4 years, something like that. Putting about two episodes out a year.
1859.
Today's theme is advice. And why advice, Rick?
Because I'm always in need of advice, Mike. Throughout my life, at the really important moments, I've often found that I was in need of advice.
That's funny, because I feel like I usually come to you for advice. I rarely get advice from you. I mean, you rarely come to me asking for advice, but I go to you for advice a lot.
Yeah, just because I'm in need of it doesn't mean that I actually ask for it, I guess.
I don't know if it's a problem, but yeah, I find myself unable to make decisions without having at least 30 friends chime in with their opinion.
It's a good way of doing things. I've noticed that you do that professionally sometimes, and I think the results have been good.
Well, there's something to a democratic sort of polling. I guess there's also the fear of homogenizing because of too many opinions and that sort of thing. But
we probably should have polled our listeners about what to do for this episode.
We should have. In fact, we just didn't ask for any advice and went straight into the idea of we're going to do an episode on advice, which is a little different from many of our previous episodes. There's nothing quite concrete about this one in the way there is with bugs or road stories or... You know, it's...
We did do shame last time, though. We were moving in an abstract direction.
Advice. I mean, what comes to mind when you think of advice? What is your story? Do you have one?
I have a couple of specific examples of horrible advice that I got from my parents when I was a kid. Because isn't it the case, Mike, that we latched onto this topic because of unique situations with respect to your parents and the kinds of advice that they gave you?
I think so, and it's funny because I hadn't even really taken into consideration bad advice, but of course that is a huge part of advice, and in fact, arguably 50% of advice is bad advice.
Might even be higher than 50%.
It might be. I guess it depends where it comes from. I guess that percentage is balanced per an individual by whatever I'm saying.
So I was thinking back to middle school, of course, the worst time of life. Did you find that middle school worst time?
I wouldn't say it was my worst time, but it was pretty awkward. I mean, you know, for me, it was a time period of frantically running through hallways trying to... I mean, my first thought is just the idea of not being able to find my classes and having this schedule, and I still have nightmares of being able to not be able to open my locker and my friends are too cool to give me help. What's your middle school?
Well, I had a really bad time in middle school. I don't know what the reasons were, but because of the really bad time I was having, my parents both seemed to want to give me advice. And a lot of my bad time in middle school had to do with other males torturing me at various times and places. And I was, about 3'10" and weighed about 60 pounds in middle school, while all these other guys were getting ready to play Pop Warner football and everything. I was like a tiny little...
You're really 3'10"?
I'm exaggerating only slightly.
Short.
Yeah. I'm exaggerating only slightly. I was really tiny. So one day my mother sat me down and she said, "When they beat you up, you just gotta fight back." Now bear in mind, my mother is 5'1" and weighs about 95 pounds. So she was telling me that I should, in fact, go ahead and do the traditional American male thing of like...
Fight back
against the guy who was 5'10" and outweighed me by a factor of
justice.
3.
You gotta serve justice.
Yeah, exactly. So I should have packed my heat into middle school.
That would have been an easier solution.
Yeah.
I want justice.
Wait, did we really say that? Yeah. And then no. I remember that my dad, I got into boarding school in eighth grade, so I was going to go away to school, and that was going to solve the problem that I was being beat up like once a week. So my father, you know, who didn't live with us anymore at this point, decided that he would give me some advice about going away to school. So one day he sat me down and he said, Rick, you're going to work hard and play hard and lay all the chicks you can.
In middle school.
In middle school. Right. Yeah. I hadn't gone through puberty yet.
I want justice. 1859.
So, Mike, your parents are both in the helping professions. Is that correct?
This is true. They're both retired at this point, but my mother is or was an occupational therapist, and my father was a psychiatrist.
And that would suggest that they've given you lots of advice over the years, correct?
It would suggest that. And yeah, I guess they give me a fair amount of advice. My father probably gives me more advice than my mother. And you know, granted, I actually ask them for advice quite often and really love getting their advice and respect their advice. You know, sometimes I get more advice than I'm looking for. In the case of my father in particular, I tend to get a lot of emails that are health oriented and you know, tell me that I should make sure I get my blood pressure checked and cholesterol checked and that sort of stuff.
What kind of volume are we talking about with these emails?
Well, it's actually been less recently, but for a while I felt like I was getting them. You know, maybe it was because while he was still practicing and working at the FDA, he was a psychiatrist for the FDA, and so he'd constantly, I guess, get newsletters which he would read and then forward to me and my brother. That, you know, I probably have 50 plus emails from my father that I've saved. That basically are recommending to get my cholesterol and blood pressure checked and all that stuff.
There are so many questions to ask about this, but I guess the obvious one is, can we hear one of the emails?
This is a very simple one from, it's actually all the way from 2007. It's just,
so you saved this for 4 years. This
well, email. Google has, I just don't delete anything. Isn't that how we use email these days? Just leave everything. Documentation. But yeah, it's just basically, and I will do this in my father's voice. Mike, have you had your cholesterol check lately? What is it? With our family histories, it is good to keep it as low as possible, even using a statin medicine like Lipitor. Love, Dad. I'm sure my father's listening to this and is going to be like, well, it's true in that voice. And I don't disagree with him. In fact, that was a big debate. I ended up trying to convince my physician to put me on Lipitor at the age of 36, 37. And in fact, there are many doctors who I've heard say, yeah, you should just put these statins in the water system at this point. Everyone should be taking statins. But there are side effects. And in fact, my doctor kind of looked at me and was like, you know, I've never had a patient ask me to put him on statins. I spend so much time trying to convince my patients to go on statins. But he didn't want to put me on statins. And my father felt like that was bad advice from my doctor. But my father also, of course, is, you know, when I go to visit him, one of the first things he does sometimes is checks my blood pressure. Like, hi, Mike, have a seat. You know, put some blood pressure thing around my arm.
1859. And here's some advice by Will Rogers, as read by Jeannie Hurst.
My mother.
Never slap a man who's chewing tobacco. Never kick a cow chip on a hot day. Never miss a good chance to shut up. Always drink upstream from the herd. The quickest way to double your money is to fold it and put it back into your pocket. There are three kinds of men. The ones that learn by reading, the few who learn by observation, the rest of them have to pee on the electric fence and find out for themselves. good judgment comes from experience, and a lot of that comes from bad judgment. If you're riding ahead of the herd, take a look back every now and then to make sure it's still there. Letting the cat out of the bag is a whole lot easier than putting it back in.
So we have a special guest today. We have Jesse Hardman, who is a freelance journalist presently working for Time.com. And actually, Jesse just got back from Thailand, China, and Ethiopia just a couple days ago. Welcome aboard, Jesse. You have any advice for us?
Bangkok is always there to help you. If you're ever in trouble in the world, specifically anywhere in Asia, head to Bangkok. It's cheap, amazing food, cool people, and if you have to lay low for a month or so, it's the perfect place. They have huge movie theaters, great beaches, and it's cheap. So Bangkok's always your safety school. 1859. A friend of mine came and met me a few weeks ago. He lives in the south of Sudan, in the newest country in the world. And he met me in Ethiopia. And everyone in Ethiopia was trying to get to these really amazing churches in the northern part of the country. But all those flights were sold out. So we'd met kind of an interesting driver, a guy with a cool history. And we couldn't get to the touristy areas, which we were fine with. So we hired this guy. And we headed out for the day to these volcanic lakes on the outskirts of the city. And all I remember about the day was we went in search of local moonshine. It's called Tej. And it started there. We drank Tej for about a half an hour. And then the next few hours were a little hazy. I know we bought Kot, which is a kind of a mild stimulant leaf that you put in your cheek. So the day ended with us spending hours alongside a lake with a bunch of Ethiopians chewing cot and staring out at the lake. No, there weren't a lot of conversations. It was more just kind of a daze. But that's something that we wouldn't have encountered had we gone to the tourist confines.
So take the street drugs.
Yeah. And if there is any local moonshine that involves somebody spitting to provide a sort of yeast and activate whatever else is in the brew, definitely drink it.
1859. What about China-related advice?
Here's what I love, especially China in the summer. China is tearing down all its old neighborhoods in places like Shanghai and putting up high-rises. And so that community core has kind of been ripped out underneath people. At night, all the old Chinese dudes go out, you know, it's 90 degrees, and they're in their boxers and their sandals, and that's it. And they sit on the street corners. There may have been stoops 30 years ago. I don't know. There are no stoops now. So they put lawn chairs out on the street corners and get absolutely hammered with their friends all night, just sitting and walking around in their boxers and, you know, with big guts and just sweating. So I just walked around without my shirt on at night, just in solidarity. It felt good, you know, like let your stomach breathe after a couple helpings of soup dumplings. And I also, Thailand as well, shitty beer tastes really good in hot, oppressive cities in the summer.
Do you have any sort of just general advice for travelers?
Get a Lonely Planet guide and then throw it away once you get there. You know, use it to get your initial introduction to the country and then don't look at it. More often than not, you know, you're going to meet some interesting people. Don't be afraid to follow them. I mean, within reason. Stay at the old creepy hotel. You know, don't go to the new slick one. Don't stay in the tourist areas. Hang out with local journalists. They will definitely get you into trouble and on different kinds of lists. And get a local phone card, because then you can be in touch with people and, you know, they'll feel like they have more access to you.
1859.
It's been a while since we've gotten Olivier Conan on the phone. Let's see if Olivier is available.
Yes.
Hey. So, Rick and I are here recording a new episode of the 1859 podcast about advice. Do you have any advice for us?
No.
None at all? Not even the slightest bit of advice?
If you wanted advice, you wouldn't be calling me, would you?
Sure, I would. You're my mentor.
Okay. Do you want me to give you less advice or more advice at this point? Should I try to come up with some advice?
Well, yeah, that's the idea.
Your personal life, your professional life?
My professional life. How about that?
Personal life. Personal life.
No.
All right, and there's Olivier Conan.
Thanks.
1859.
You knew it would happen eventually. It's golf advice from Kelly U. Daly.
Useful advice on how to cure a golf slice and be a better golfer. How to cure a golf slice is something that a lot of golfers wish they knew how to do. It can affect a huge part of your game and really make it a lot harder for you to play your best. In fact, if you are slicing the ball with your swing, then you are not playing your best. In this article, I'm going to share with you some points that I think you should know and think about when it comes to curing a golf slice. One of the main things you should be aware of is the fact that curing your golf slice can, in some cases, do wonders for your overall game. How to cure a golf slice. Here are some of the main factors that come into play when it comes to curing a golf slice. These points are not the only things you should think about and work on, but they're definitely a good start. Do you have the proper stance? This is something a lot of new golfers tend to have a problem with. The stance is very important to the swing and can have a big effect if not done correctly. It's pretty obvious why the stance is so important. I mean, think about it. It is the exact position you are in as you swing. Therefore, it is going to have a big effect on it. You should work on perfecting your stance so that you can perfect your swing. Is your grip tight enough? That is another big thing that a lot of new golfers have a problem with. A weak grip can make it much more likely for you to slice the ball, and therefore, you should have a strong, solid grip when swinging. This is one of the simplest things about a golf swing, yet it is such a common mistake that is made. Remember when you are about to swing that you should have a strong, firm grip on the club. You may find that you're actually a much better player after you have cured your slice, so get working on it.
1859.
Ethiopian Field Recordings by Jesse Hardy. 1859 is produced by Michael Hurst and Rick Moody and is not affiliated with National Public Radio. This week's episode concerned advice and featured the voices of Olivier Conan, Kelly U. Daly, Jesse Hardman, and Mike's mom, Jeannie Hurst. Come back soon for the next episode, which will concern wedding ceremonies. No cot was consumed during the making of this episode. Thanks for listening. Now I'm making up some more stuff because Mike told me to, because we still have 14 seconds. Now we have 10 seconds. And now 4 seconds.
Goodbye.